Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. All right.
Sorry.
You want to go see a doctor before we continue with this episode, which is Season 4, Episode 6, Strangers in the Night. Now, here are your hosts, Sarah D. Bunting, maybe Tara Ariano. She might be dead.
Hi, sorry. I tried to get as far away from the microphone as I could.
Cough into your shirt or something.
Okay, sorry.
Come on, guys. This is a professional operation.
David!
Not everyone would enjoy that. Oh, it gets added to the perma drops, perhaps.
Oh.
Beep, 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 beep. Time for another David update. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, how are you?
I'm the same. I'm pleased that we could lead with that drop and wish our producer, David T. Cole, a belated happy birthday with it.
Oh,
yes. As we record this, his birthday is tomorrow. But by the
guess
time...
how old I am.
How's it feel to be 19?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Very mature for your age.
For my birthday, the only thing I requested is that we go eat a tremendously large Indian lunch. And I'm going to fart the rest of the night and play Rocket League. That's my birthday.
The farting is really not out of the ordinary, but...
No, that's not. That's not special.
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Judging by the fart cloud I had to walk through that was human and canine this morning.
All right, before you get to
everybody.
Before you get to the show, I just want to remind everybody, you can go to Glarkware, GLARKWARE.com, order a The Blaze shirt, order a Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know shirt, or order the other one.
Don't be such a squeef.
Thank you.
Don't be such a squeef and forget what the third shirt is.
Now available in multiple colors, multiple sizes, each shirt. Comes with no extra charge, two sleeves. Take it away.
All right, let's talk about Strangers in the Night.
Starting exchanging now. Brays.
Yeah. If only they were exchanging them, but unfortunately.
No, they're all unidirectional.
It's a one bray street.
It Sorry. Is. Nice, good one. In honor of that dad joke, I feel it incumbent upon me to note that this episode was directed by James Ackhouse. Another recent episode was directed by Jason Priestley. I forget which one. Probably one where he was a tit. But anyway.
Oh, that narrows it down.
I know.
Thanks, Tara.
Let's start with our D plot. David is a lazy pig.
David!
That's the one.
Shit.
So after Donna and Kelly have made themselves late waiting for him, David emerges from his room to say he's not going to class today. They don't really care, but tell him to clean the bathroom if he's not going to school. Fair. Bets on whether that will occur? No bet. I guarantee it does not. I wouldn't actually trust David to clean a bathroom, frankly. I know even if he would do a very half-assed job. You know he's never had to.
Yeah. Which he says as much, doesn't he?
He does. We'll get to that. There's a clip where he refers to the fact that in his previous life, he was used to having a housekeeper live in. But anyway, Donna tells him not to sit on the couch all day. David calls her mom and goes straight to the TV, obviously, to watch a fucking cartoon because it was the 90s and there was nothing good on. Like Law and Order SVU marathons, for example. Donna creeps into David's room later and aggressively wakes him up. This is the next day. He tries to get her to snuggle with him, but things quickly evolve in clip number two.
Can I make one teeny weeny suggestion?
What?
Brush your teeth.
Ah, that laugh! It's like torture to
me. And also, don't come in his room to harangue him, and then before he can even get up and, like, clamber around you up to a standing position from his, whatever, junky mattress on the floor.
Thank you.
Like... fuck off. Like, bring in some breath strips. Had they invented those yet?
No.
A Tic Tac? Something? Like, it's just bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, granted this is the first they've been cohabitating, but it's not like she's never smelled morning breath before. Anyway, he bitches that she is nagging him, which she kind of is, but it's because he's a pig, and keeps begging off about doing anything around the house because of his job, which does he even get paid for his work? I feel like people who work for a campus radio station don't actually get paid, do they?
No.
Ours didn't have one. I mean, like, maybe permanent staff who aren't students, but if you're, like, a kid who has a radio show, I doubt that you're getting paid. I mean, I know it is a job whether you're getting paid or not if you take it seriously, which he does, but still. Anyway, Later, Kelly and Donna prepare to have an intervention about how gross David is, and that occurs in clip number 3.
What do you want?
We told you, a house meeting.
Well, I hope this isn't a meeting where the two of you get together and yell at me because I don't wake up as early as you do. Because if so, I really have some things I...
Wait just a second, Mr. Silver. We have to set some house rules right here and right now.
Oh, really? Such as?
Such as if you make a mess in the kitchen, you clean it up. And you wash your dishes and you throw away your ravioli cans. Exactly. You would have never left food out at home.
Yes, I would have. And Lucille would have cleaned it up.
Excuse me, but we are not planning on being your housekeepers. You need to clean up your act, and you need to study some more. And a little personal hygiene would not hurt.
Well, who died and made you guys my parents? I mean, why should you be able to tell me what I can and can't do?
Because we live together, and majority rules.
Majority nothing. I thought the whole idea for getting this apartment was so I would have the freedom to do what I wanted.
David, we are just asking for a little help keeping the apartment decent.
Well, I have a job, okay?
Oh, stop using that stupid job as an excuse.
Whatever, I gotta go.
David!
Look, just save it, all right? I had no idea I was gonna be moving in with Mr. Clean and the Tidy Bowl Man.
Good one?
kick him out. He is such an asshole. Like, it's one thing to be rude to your girlfriend. Like, she can break up with you. But Kelly's your sister. Like, have some respect. She didn't choose to be in your life. I mean, I guess she did, sort of, but...
Yeah, although... Seriously, this is shit you agree on day one.
Yes.
Four wheel.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Although, like, throw out your ravioli cans, like, that's basic. You can't throw a thing in the garbage. Like, how big of an animal is he? Disgusting. Anyway.
Well, and if you're not going to do the shit, don't, like, you don't get to be rude about it.
Yeah.
Also?
Yeah.
He sucks. I don't, ugh, whatever. I mean, shut up, David.
This is like, this is standard, you know, first time having your own place shit. And obviously it would start to rankle about week 2, because that would be when things were starting to get really disgusting. So, I mean, I get why the show had to cover it. It doesn't make me any less enraged about how disgusting he is. Anyway, then later on his stupid show, David bores his 4 listeners by apologizing on the air to Donna. Donna, in bed with her full face of makeup, are relieved. But maybe she wouldn't be if she knew what was happening at the station in clip number 4.
Girlfriend giving you grief?
It's just the schedule. So spent all the time I can barely talk, let alone clean up.
Yeah,
spent?
Night shift does take some getting used to.
How'd you do it? Up all night, every night?
Well, with the help of my little friend, Mr. Stay Awake. Here, take these. These will keep you up and at 'em.
No, thanks. I don't do that.
It's just caffeine. But don't take too many of them, because they can get you kind of lightheaded.
Thanks.
My pleasure. Listen, I know that the graveyard shift is a killer. So if you ever need anything stronger, don't be shy.
All right.
My pleasure.
Ooh, trouble.
Where could this be leading?
I don't know, but probably nowhere we need to worry about. After all, as David said, he doesn't do that. So end of story, question mark?
I'm sure it is. That's not just foreshadowing. It was like 7 shadowing, but let's just forget all about it.
Also, just to make sure that you know he's shady, Howard, the station manager who David is talking to in that scene, winks 2 times in that tiny scene, like in the space of that clip.
I think there was also a finger gun.
There might have been a, like, one of those too. But before we proceed to our C plot, Sarah.
Well, Mother's Day has just passed, Franklin. And okay, maybe you can be forgiven for not having your shit together in time to wish a happy Mother's Day to your mom, Erin Stoyer, because you're only 2 and a half, but that excuse is not going to fly next year.
And Franklin, you're very lucky because from what your dad Eric tells us, you did not end up with a crappy mom like some of the kids in this zip code unfortunately did.
Your mom Erin can, from what we can surmise, be captured on film, unlike Andrea's mother.
Unlike Donna's mom Felice, Erin's not a sex hypocrite and certainly would never do anything to ruin your day trying to meet a band as cool as Color Me Bad.
Assuming Erin's never tried to bring anyone to a mind gym, she's way out ahead of Dylan's mother Iris.
She's a better dresser than Steve's mom, Samantha, if her shoulder pads don't impede her passage through doors.
No, your mother Erin combines the down-to-earth warmth of Cindy Walsh with the model good looks of Jackie Taylor, which means that you, Franklin, really have the best of both worlds, mom-wise.
So next year, we know you won't be late with your festive wishes. Happy Mother's Day, Erin.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day.
Moving on. Jesus. To our C story, hard times for Kelly and Dylan and Dylan's Porsche. After a montage
not
of,
hard enough.
After a montage of dicks driving showily
last night.
What is happening?
Then what's the matter?
Oh, no.
Spoiler! You will spoil it.
Okay, I'm just gonna not edit that. But I do want to explain what's happening. Quickly, I have three different computers operating at once, and the keyboards are all
it's
lined
true,
up.
He does
because I am working Skype on one computer, the board on another computer, and I'm trying to order roller derby equipment on another. And I thought I was about to type a reply to somebody, and it just triggered like all the clips. So I apologize, you guys. I'm just telling you right now that clip 16 that you heard a piece of, it's a barn burner.
Ahem. Technical difficulties aside, I'm sure, for the rest of this episode. After a montage of dicks driving showily expensive cars around Beverly Hills, we see Dylan in his dumb Porsche, which stalls out at a stoplight. Oh no, what will Brenda brag about to her enemies in Minnesota now if his car doesn't work? So Dylan's mechanic we see is Felipe from Three's Company. Do you guys remember Felipe? He was like the Manuel of Jack's restaurant toward the end of the run of Three's Company. That guy. It's always screwing stuff up. Spoke broken English. Ask your parents. Moving on. He tells Dylan it's abusive to drive a vintage car as hard as Dylan drives his Porsche, and that he needs an everyday car to give the Porsche a rest. Donna, meanwhile, is trying to get Kelly out the door so she won't be late for her class when John Sears calls. Donna is suspicious about what he wanted, but Kelly tells her nothing. And then Dylan is showing up unannounced at Jim's office and bumping out someone with an actual appointment to tell Jim that he needs to buy another car and why in clip number 5.
What exactly did you have in mind?
Oh, I don't know. Just, you know, an old beater, something to drive around in.
Oh. All right. Well, pick out something sensible and I'll make sure you're covered.
Just remember that was the exchange when later events happen. Fucking Dylan. Anyway, Jim then boards us all about his college car, which he apparently ran into the ground. At an Alpha and Omega movie, Kelly gets assigned to drive a van of donated clothes to a shelter in Downey. This shelter is going to be a big plot point later, so remember that. It is a thing. She tries to get out of it by saying she doesn't know how to drive a van. Nice try, Kelly. It's the same as
a car. I have totally tried that. Oh, I wish it ever worked. It doesn't.
It's not a semi. Like, you know how to drive a van if you know how to drive a car, but okay. However, Leslie says that a keg pledge will drive. Kelly just has to keep him company. What? Seems like a one-man job. Also, I'm sure I don't know why they have to leave at 6 a.m. They're going to Downey, not Phoenix, but whatever, of course. This is all just a pretext because John Sears is the one who ends up driving the van to Downey with Kelly. They talk about that in clip number 6.
You planned this, didn't you?
Why? Would you be upset if I did?
I don't know.
Well, you said you were going to call me back last night. And you never did.
Right. Sorry. Just got a little overwhelmed. School and Alpha meeting, everything.
Dylan. Would you rather I didn't call?
I just wish my life was a little simpler.
Is it complicated?
Actually, yes, it is. I just need some time to figure out how I want all of this to go.
Okay. I'll give you 50 years to figure it out. And not a minute more.
I might need 51.
Okay. I hope your man appreciates what he's got.
Ugh, man.
So do I.
These two cornballs so deserve each other.
My God. I mean, at least, thank you, John Sears. Her life really is not complicated.
No.
She's a college freshman who hates her current boyfriend, who weighs 127 pounds. Next.
They're just both so basic. Like, I give him grief for his whole, like, smooth-talking gigolo routine, but she is no better. And if you watch this episode, you can see in this scene, as soon as he shows up, she starts carrying the bags toward the van. She's got her elbows, like, so far behind her back, like, they're practically touching each other to like, throw her chest out at him. Like, he's already on the hook. Take it easy. And the fucking baby voice. She's so barfy. Anyway.
Oh, God. She's terrible. Also, so long, Cool Kelly. R.I.P.
I know. It was a good run while it lasted. Also, please go to the visual aids to see the shadow of a fuzzy boom mic on the van in the scene. Yes, I got it.
Oh, the chaperon Rex.
Then Dylan and Brandon and Steve are at school leafing through car magazines. Kelly shows up. Dylan asks how the drive went, and the subject changes back to his car before she has to say that John Sears was involved. This is also the first she's hearing, apparently, about Dylan's needing a new car because they don't talk because they hate each other. Now, remember how Dylan was going to buy an old beater car? Well, he and Brandon and Steve and Kelly have ended up in a Dodge dealership where he is about to test drive a Viper. God.
This is not the last Viper we see either, I don't think.
Maybe.
I think Valerie ends up with one.
Oh, well, they must have been a sponsor. Brandon insists on speaking in a shitty Southern accent because they're now shopping for an American car.
Why?
But I refuse to clip it because it's so stupid. Like,
hallelujah. And it goes on forever.
It really does. And also, like what 18-year-old really cares that much if you buy American? Like, was that still a thing in the 90s, and did teenagers care about it? I have no idea. Anyway.
NAFTA? I don't know.
I guess. Then Dylan is pulling up at the Walsh house in a new Porsche because I guess he is extremely committed to letting the world know his penis is so, so small. Brandon congratulates him, but Jim is not so sure about this in clip number 7.
Well, how much did it cost?
Well, it was a little more than you probably might have wanted to spend.
I can see that.
But the thing is, it's a great car, you know? I mean, I figured the old Porsche is still running. These are great cars. I can afford a new one. I got the money, so why not get it?
I thought the idea was to get a transportation vehicle.
Okay, so it's not a station wagon, all right? But I'm a little bolder than that. Life's short.
How much?
See, that's the truly great thing about this. I mean, it is an expensive car, but I figure I'll amortize it over, 10 years? And the old one's a 61. She's still running.
How much?
It's on the sticker.
Well, what do you have to look forward to next? Rolls Royce? Dylan, what's going on here? I never thought you were the kind of guy who needed a car like this to show off with.
So what are you saying? You're not going to cover the check?
I'm not saying that.
Good. I'm glad, because you know what? It's my money. Let me learn how to deal with it.
I mean, why even fucking ask him then if it's your money?
Right.
Do whatever you want. Like, he does have a good point. A Porsche probably... Actually, I don't know anything about Porsches, but, like, usually a German car, you're good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's a fine car, but also, like, how defensive he is not answering how much it was for so long. It's like, you know you fucked up. You don't need this car.
Yeah. And why'd you have them, like, they'll take the sticker off. Part of the white glove treatment you get with buying literally any car, including a Smart. They come out with a razor blade and some soap, and they take the sticker off. So if you didn't want to answer questions about it, why didn't you take the sticker off? Oh, that's right. Because you're a performative little douche.
Mm-hmm. Also, Jim's thing of, like, I didn't think you were the kind of person that needed a car like this to show off. What was his previous car doing? It was a 1960 whatever Porsche. Like, that's
also
the last
this person is wearing a shirt made of like Argentine grasses in like every scene in the next couple of episodes. Like, we get it. Yeah. It's a poet shirt.
It's true.
Hateful.
Yeah. Well, speaking of hate, Kelly is at home studying at night when John calls to remind us all that he is gross in clip number 8.
This is getting to be a habit, isn't it?
What is?
You calling me.
Oh, I thought we agreed it was okay to call you.
We did.
Look, but don't touch, right?
That's right.
So tell me, what's going on at the freshman pad tonight?
Nothing. Donna's asleep. David's at the radio station.
And you? What's the world's most desirable co-ed doing this evening?
I'm just in bed studying.
In bed? Really?
Well, what's the world's most desirable co-ed wearing this evening?
Call a 900 number, John. Don't you have anything better to do?
Not really. Unless I can convince you to come out with me tonight.
I can't do that.
Well, then talk on the phone it is.
Okay, let's talk.
So are you coming to our mud bowl tomorrow night?
That's what you choose to talk about.
I swear to God, if this show were like, if they made this show now and it was on like Showtime or whatever, like he would have whipped it out by now.
For sure.
And started jerking it.
Yes, but she obviously is completely knows what she's doing, playing into it, being like, I'm just in bed studying. Like, you could just say you were studying. Like, you don't get to then turn around and be like, get your mind out of the gutter. Like, you started it.
Seriously. Anyway. Although, I don't know. Like, they're both horrible. He called her a co-ed. But on the other hand, like, Paul Johansson is just such a champion in this role, like, truly. Yeah. Like, someone hand him a mustache so that he can twirl it. He's having the time of his fucking life. Yes. It is great.
Anyway, we don't get to hear more about the mud bowl because Dylan has to come over to bitch about his surrogate dad in clip number 9.
Nine.
What's the matter, buyer's remorse?
You think I'm showing off?
No, I love that car.
I do too. It's a great car. You know, I mean, it is my life. If I want to go out and buy a brand new car, what's the big deal?
Where is all this coming from?
Jim Walsh.
Would you please stop letting him bother you? It is your money.
That's what I said.
Then what is the problem?
I don't know. I know it's late, but you want to take a drive with me?
Yeah, sure. Let me just go put some clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
She then puts jeans on over her pajama shorts. Yeah. Like, Christ.
Yeah, she's actually does that, but she's, you know, gets John Sears off the phone, of course. She's so bored by all of this, like, not interested one tiny bit in hearing about Jim Walsh is guilting him any more than she was anything about his actual dead dad. Like, they hate each other. They hate each other so much. Anyway, yeah. Dylan then drives Kelly home to the driveway behind her house, and she's still crabby because she hates him. But she asks if he feels better now, and he says he does, but he probably won't for long after the events of clip number 10.
I love the smell of real leather.
Yeah, we'll get a good whiff because tomorrow I'm trading it for a Ford Bronco. Jim was right. I don't need this car. This car's for picking up girls. I already got a girl.
About that.
Whoops.
You okay, Kel? Been kind of quiet.
Yeah, I'm just tired. I was up really early, you know?
Well, you know the best place to get a good night's sleep is my house.
I don't think so.
Okay. Maybe not so much for the sleep, but the night will be good. Kel, what is it?
I don't know. I guess what? I guess it seems like we both just want different things right now. I know you think it's silly, but I want to go to fraternity parties. I want to go to football games. I want to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just think that maybe we should start seeing other people.
I see.
It's no one in particular. I just want to know that I can if I want to. It's not like I want to break up with you or anything.
Because I'm a pussy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry too. I mean, it's gonna be dangerous to seeing other people. That's how we started. Brenda said the exact same thing you just did.
I know.
Yeah, well, you have a good night.
You wake on me?
Why?
Sometime.
Why? You hate each other.
You hate each other so much. The one and only thing I like about the scene is that Kelly, the way Kelly sort of backs into it, like from the start of it, you can tell she's not It's not like she comes into it resolved to dump him.
Oh, no.
What the hell?
I don't know.
don't you?
So what happened was, I don't know. I just pressed the button.
What did you buy this time? Was it a helmet?
Dave went and got another computer and hooked it up in here. He's now using my computer somehow.
You know, in the 70s when they had those keyboardists that like surrounded themselves on all four sides with keyboards and would spin around? That's what I'm trying to move towards with this computer setup for this podcast.
What's the praying mantis guy from Space Ghost?
Yeah, it's going to come
anyway,
to me.
That's
later.
Dave.
Yeah.
Whatever. Getting back to my point, the scene doesn't start with her being like, "Well, now I'm going to break up with Dylan," but then, like, as the conversation goes on, she's sort of like, "Well, it was going to happen eventually. It might as well be now," which felt kind of realistic to me, I suppose. No.
Well, yeah. I mean, whatever. We've all had that conversation where we just wouldn't rip the Band-Aid off. So
yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, he's right about, like, well, let's see other people. Like, just break up. Like, I don't know why you're going through this charade.
Plus, he's not that big of a catch. Not like Zorak from Space Ghost
Thank
Coast
you,
to Coast.
There
Zorak.
You go.
Zorak! Anyway, after Kelly gets out of the car, Dylan peels down the alley way too fast and unsafely for my taste. And then he stopped at a light. And this happens. Clip 11.
Sucker.
So he gets carjacked. Now, I have never been carjacked, and I hope I never have to find out what I would say in that moment. But I hope it wouldn't be "whoa," like Dylan does at the beginning of that clip.
You ever see that meme video of the guy kind of spacing out, going "whoa," from the 70s?
Yes.
That's what I imagine he was doing right there.
That's not for the 70s. That's Italian Spider-Man.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, Dylan. This is not going to end well for you or anyone. But that's what you get for buying that stupid, stupid car that is stupid.
Yeah.
Moving
Sorry.
on. Sorry. Oh, this is going to be so cringy.
Oh, God.
Okay, let's get through this. To our B story, Andrea meets the D. Okay, Brandon has nothing to do with all his friends greeking around. So he tries to do something with his fallback, but Andrea also have plans that don't involve him with Dan, in fact. Unfortunately for Andrea, her plan is apparently to sit through a mansplanation from Dan Rubin in clip number 12.
Well, Faulkner demands a little more imagination than freshmen are willing to give.
Oh, so you're saying that we freshmen are just old funny daddies?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying
just
that
you
remind me a little less literal. That's all.
I'm trying to be a little less literal.
I know. Believe me, you're an endless surprise.
I bet you say that to all your students, Professor Rubin.
Oh, call me professor. It makes me sound so ancient. Besides, I'm only your teaching assistant during class, and we're not in class now.
No, we're not.
What would you say if I kissed you?
I say that this is neither the time nor place.
What if it was a different place?
What if we went back to the dorms?
Uh-oh. First of all, that is the worst flirting foreplay I ever heard. That fucking Faulkner conversation made me want to kill myself.
I mean,
ugh, worst. Anyway, speaking of the worst, they do go back to the dorms.
Oh, no!
And okay, I mean, I hesitate to send you to the visual aids for this, but I did make a gif of Andrea and Dan's frantic wrestling in bed. And I think this is partly a function of the fact that the actor who plays Dan is quite tall. And Andrea, as we know, is very short. And I think it's like a choreography problem that makes it hard for them to seem convincing.
I think like she has to be hidden from like the tits down because
pregnant.
But then
yes.
He can't actually be like grinding on top of her because pregnant.
Also the FCC.
Yeah. And also, you know, their faces are right next to each other. And
it's really, It's really weird. Just see,
it's
go
not,
to this kid.
It's not a great.
It's not. Okay, speaking of not great, oh, Jesus Christ, clip 13.
Dan.
Yeah.
Do you have.
Do you have any pistachio nutcrackers?
Do you have protection?
Yes. Of course, don't worry. It's taken care of.
There's something else.
No, 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 please don't. Please.
Dan, there's something I have to tell you.
Mm. Oh, what do you have to tell?
I'm a virgin. I just thought that was
important. Oh, word?
The music's like, oh, girl, no.
It's an incredible turnoff, isn't it?
No, of course not.
Yep.
Not at all. I love the idea that you'd want me to be your first, but...
But what?
Your first time should be... something truly special.
And this isn't special enough.
No, it is. It's very special.
No.
But we just met, and... as a gentleman and an all-around good guy...
Let me go put on this clown mask. No, make it really nice. Special. You'll remember this one.
From the fact that I've gone completely limp. In fact, my penis is retracted back into my thoracic cavity, and I am now hung like an acorn.
That's how they fit so many penises in those little clown cars.
There are rules about stuff like
this. No, it's not a problem. I mean, I want to.
No, I know, but let's both go take cold showers and collect our thoughts, okay? There's plenty of time for this.
Oh, the whisper. It's so horrible. Everything about it is so horrible.
She's just so... And this isn't special enough. Like, well, now it isn't.
Yeah.
Weirdo.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, again, as
like,
we keep...
if you're holding the V card, hold it. It's not part of the flop. Okay? It's not a communal hand. You hold it and then you shred it. That's it.
Yeah, she didn't have to say anything. Like, why?
No.
It's just... But also, as the show has to keep reminding us accidentally, not meaning to, any guy who says what a nice, great guy he is gross and a scumbag. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Dan's not a scumbag.
Brandon.
Yet, but yes, exactly. Brandon obviously is the one who started this trend, but like, anyone who tells you that is being defensive or hiding something or weird. Like... just be what you are. You don't have to announce it. Anyway, speaking of holding cards, gross, horrible. Let's move on.
To Andrea's hornsomnia.
I know. At 12:30 a.m., Andrea is awake and super horny. So she steals down the hall to Dan's room, all you up. And even though she had wanted her first time to be special, she's here now. So he's less concerned, I guess. Oh, God, and then it's even worse. The next day, we have to watch
Jesus.
Andrea.
Oh.
We have to watch her admiring her de-virginized self in the mirror. I made a gif. Brandon shows up at her door with coffee and pastries, which is unusually thoughtful of him. She doesn't know why he's there, and he acts all offended when he asks when, and then he turns out he wants to tap into her database for his sociology class because he sucks. And then this happens and we're all going to die. Clip 14.
Oh, no.
Brandon, do I look any different today?
What?
Nothing. Never mind.
Andre, you okay?
Actually, I've never felt better.
Seriously, this is not a Judy Blume book, you fucking ancient weirdo. Go put some hard candies in a bowl to melt in the sun. Please stop talking about your veg. I hate this subplot so much.
Oh, it's so close to being over. All right, so then in class, Andrea and Dan exchange cute secret looks, but then she feels weird about it because they're obviously not supposed to be boning. There's, and then in the next scene when they're about to hook up again, the hooking up, the foreplay blocking is even weirder. Sarah, do you know what I'm talking about? They're sitting up in bed and he's got like a hand toward her boob, except then her hand is under his hand. So he's not actually touching her boob. I made a GIF. Check it out. Agree with me. That's really fucking weird and awkward.
I think I was actually in the couch in my office, like under it, rocking.
Dash your eyes
quietly.
Out, Oedipus style. Yes. Anyway, they're about to bone again when she asks if he thinks it's a good idea for them to get involved. I'll field this one. It's not. He's probably not supposed to sleep with his advisees as an RA, never mind a TA, but somehow he is oblivious in clip 15.
Andrea, where's this coming from?
It's coming from your employee handbook. What the hell?
And the student handbook and
yes.
Living in the world and having
yes.
maybe caught a couple of LA Law reruns.
Yes. I can't wait for everyone who listens to this podcast who has anything at all to do with academia to be like, zero part of this could happen. He would be in so much trouble, and rightly so. Like,
unless the fact that she looks demonstrably 15 years older than he does means yeah. that no one would ever find out, because they would just assume that. Actually, it still will work because they'll think that he's her or she's his advisor.
Right. Anyway, what he actually says after that is this clip 16.
I had a wonderful time last night.
Barf.
So did I.
Then what's the matter?
I just can't have you as my teacher in English class and my lover in the dorm. It's too hard. Gotta make a choice. I either switch English classes or stop seeing each other.
Well, doesn't seem like much of a choice.
It doesn't.
Find yourself another English teacher.
Okay, just note at the end of that clip. That was not me screwing up the clipping. That was like, that's how fast the editor cut off that scene of her weird Nana laugh, because whoever was doing it was like, I can't. Like, just slams into the next scene without any transition at all, because Andrea's laugh is not as bad as Donna's, but not great. Really ages
her.
Also aging her, saying lover.
Oh my god, I just...
No.
Blarf.
Beef. All right. This plot line is not much less barfy, but let's get to it anyway. The A story, Brenda meets Stuart. Brenda is getting her secretary on at Jim's office with her hair looking even more split-endy than we've literally ever seen it, by the way. Check out the visual aids if you dare.
Oh my god. It's unbelievable.
So ugly. It's like hateful what they've done to her. It looks like they've teased the ends of it somehow. Like, it's so shitty looking.
Anyway. Yeah, it's like they pinned a, like, welcome mat to her back.
Yes. But speaking of bad hair.
And boot brushy. Although I guess, you know. There is a twin resemblance there in that case.
True. Anyway, her terrible hair meets its twin in Lawrence Carson, the only person in the city whose hair it looks even worse than hers. It's also the visual aids. It's like really bad old man rinse, probably a toupee plus a dye job. It's like everything bad that a guy in his 60s shading into 70s can do. Anyway, he is faintly flirty with her in that gross old white man way. And when Jim comes out, he tells Larry that Brenda is his daughter. We find out that he's a developer who built some mall that she shops at. Later, Brenda comes moping home from work, bitching that she's living like a nun. Jim observes that she is too picky with guys, but Brenda says she's willing to lower her standards. Well, good news. Clip 17.
I hear you made quite an impression on Larry Carson today.
Well, I think he's a little old for me.
No. No, he has a son.
Oh, no. Forget about it. No sons.
He might be cute.
Mom, you don't have the greatest track record. The last time you set me up on a blind date, the boy was barely out of his diapers.
Well, Lawrence Carson's son is 24 years old.
And he's probably very nice.
Well, that's the kiss of death.
Brenda, hey, come on. Just one date.
Okay. What's his name?
Stuart.
Stuart?
What's wrong with that?
It's a perfectly fine name.
Maybe, but somehow I don't think it sounds like the name of my true love.
What okay. dad wants his 18-year-old daughter to date a rich 24-year-old, first of all? Like, this does not seem like gym-like behavior at all to me.
Yeah. And also, like, the sons of rich dudes are known for being nice guys.
Uh-huh. Oh, totally. Yes. Why
wouldn't
they?
And also, you've met him before in season one.
Yes. That's true. We will get to it. But, you know, maybe Jim thinks that Brenda is insulated from his roving hands because his name is Stuart. Which I, whatever. Although, before we proceed with our A's plot, all this talk about Stuart's name and whether it's objectionable reminds me, I just heard about someone whose name is Laura, but her loved ones, including her sister Jennifer, call her Lewis?
So in honor of Lewis's birthday, we matched up some of the show's characters with the Lewises they most closely resemble. For instance, it would be very easy to lift out Dylan and replace him with Parker Lewis, who's also kind of bad, a little bad, and a lot more fun to watch.
Brandon has a lot in common with Homicide's Detective Meldrick Lewis in that he's very nosy and he loves solving shit.
John Sears is the only character around who could potentially go toe-to-toe with Lou Ferrigno.
Well, that is true. Since Andrea's just discovered sex, let's call her the Meriwether Lewis of California University.
Yeah, they're probably about the same age. but here's the thing, Tara.
Yeah.
Who's the Lewis Black in this scenario?
Ooh. David, because he's angry all the fucking time?
Ooh, maybe. Wait, no. How could we forget the show's resident stand-up comic?
Who?
Brenda, star of Fallout Club, yes. a.k.a. Lou Voigt.
Oh, God, you nailed it. And we did it.
Happy birthday, Lewis.
Yeah, and happy Mother's Day, too.
Yeah. And then it's time for the date, which apparently is starting at like 4 p.m, judging by how light it is out. Cindy is instantly in love with Stuart, judging by her look at the door. I made a gif. And as Sarah indicated, it is someone we have seen before. It's Tom the Bellman. Is that his name?
Tom, Bob, Tim,
anyway, from
something like that.
From Palm Springs, the guy that set Brenda up in the janitor's closet was super nice to her when she couldn't find where Dylan was staying. Back up and watch or listen to that podcast again to refresh your memory. Jim and Brandon have this weird walkout, by the way, which I also made a gif of, where they're like exactly shoulder to shoulder coming from the kitchen to the foyer and then just stand there to meet their mark. It's so strange. Anyway, everyone there is bad at small talk in clip 18.
So do you go to California University also?
Yeah. Doing the freshman thing like everyone else. What about you?
Oh, I had a semester at Pepperdine and now I'm doing some other stuff. Some consulting, investing. Actually, I just work with my dad.
Got it. You're in the mob. Like, is that not what it sounds like?
Consulting, investing, bullshitting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm a promoter. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah. And this is the beginning of, first of all, a very weird subplot that doesn't know what it wants to do about Brenda's curfew at the age of 18. And Brandon being part of the enforcement of that, even though he is 11 minutes older than she is.
Yes.
I'm just going to register this objection now so that I can shorthand it somehow for the next like 3 episodes that this is going on.
Yeah.
He keeps like giving Jim parenting orders. Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. It's been a while since he's done that, but I'm not glad it's back. There was no reason for it to be. It's terrible. Anyway, then Brenda comes tripping down the stairs and literally freezes at the sight of Stuart because she likey. She looks like hell, by the way, but he acts as if he loves what he sees. excuse me. I'm allergic to the storyline. And then when they get out to the car, there actually hilariously is some ADR about how early it is. Anyway, at dinner, the bad small talk rages on in clip 19.
I really like this place, you know, because it reminds me of Rome.
Okay.
And when in Rome, do as the Romans do, right?
Yes. Bye.
So do you come here often?
Yeah, pretty often.
Neat.
So my father tells me that you started this semester at the University of Minnesota. Why did you decide to bag it?
I don't know. It just didn't really seem the right place for me.
Oh, I understand. Listen, I know you must be thinking what kind of a dork
needs his father to get him a date.
No, not at all. I'm having a wonderful time.
Why? Sounds like it.
They haven't even come around with the wine list yet.
Well, speaking of which, then Stewart tries to order a bottle of wine and the waiter asks to see Brenda's ID as if. Stewart then bribes the guy to look the other way. And then we find out Larry is a partner in the restaurant and Stewart is there all the time. Like, there's no way anyone who worked there would be carding his girlfriend. What even is the point of all of that? However, Stewart should have asked about Brenda's table manners like Dan did Andrea in the last episode, because when we get to dessert, Brenda is hunched over it like she thinks her celly's going to try and steal it from her. She's like,
I think, what is that?
I don't know. I think my file name for it in the visual aids is like Vulture Brenda or something such looks like.
I'm surprised she wasn't using that like Shawshank sport grip.
Completely.
What's his name is using in the first scene with the worm and the, yeah, Jesus.
Sadler, William Sadler.
Yes, thank you.
Anyway, they discuss how good it is in clip 20.
This dessert is even better than you said. I've never had chocolate creme brulee before.
So you like it?
I like it. This is unequivocally the best meal I've ever had.
That seems hard to believe.
We'll believe it. But you don't know my ex-boyfriend. We never went to places like this. Actually, we hardly ever went out. And we never, ever had wine with dinner.
Never?
Well, Dylan's an alcoholic, you know, recovering.
A 12-stepper.
Yeah. Which is great that he's dealing with it, and I really respect him for it. But sometimes it wasn't exactly fun for me.
Well, maybe it's time you started having some fun.
Oh, well, don't get the wrong idea. I mean, we had fun, just not like this. Dylan was different. He's kind of a hard guy to explain.
Well, let's not even try.
Stewart for president.
That's the best Stewart line ever. However, as we're about to find out in later episodes, he and Dylan like have a past. So the fact that he probably by this point knows that Brenda went to West Beverly and wouldn't put it together that it was that Dylan is slightly suspect.
Well, Stewart is a dope, so...
Stewart is very dumb. That is true. Brenda apologizes for talking about her ex, and Stewart is glad because the night is young. There is clubbing to be done. They have to go to Falcons.
Which appears to be in the same hotel set that they used for that Law & Order SVU episode where the mom was bringing... Oh, it's your favorite, Julie Bowen, was bringing her kid.
Oh, yes.
To get, like, experimental treatments. Like,
of course. Yep.
I don't... There wasn't a club or a warehouse or anything you 90210, a huge show, mm-hmm. could get.
Yeah.
Why are you at a Marriott?
Yes. It's a really hopping club called Falcons. It's incredibly well lit also. And I made three gifs of Stewart dancing because he dances so weird. Like, okay, we get it, you're straight. Like, we're all definitely convinced now that we've seen your moves, but he keeps doing this thing with his wrist. Please, I can't describe it. Go to the visual aids. It's very flappy and wristy and maybe slightly yeah. offensive, depending on what... Anyway.
It is odd. And then Shando is doing her usual, like,
plant
I have
it
cat
butt.
Hair on my ass, mm-hmm. single move on the floor. So,
yep.
Yeah.
However, somehow she has fun for once. And then it's after one, she wants to leave, but he talks her into one slow dance. And meanwhile, at home, Brandon comes downstairs to find Jim awake, pouring cereal while he waits up for Brenda. It's 1:45, so we know that Stewart has no respect for Brenda's stated wishes. Good to know. And then sometime after two, Stewart finally brings Brenda home. They have a smacky kiss on the doorstep, and then this exchange in clip 21.
Do you have any plans for the rest of the week?
Not really.
How about for the rest of your life?
All right. I mean, I guess
That's where all the blood rushes away from my nethers. And I'm like, I'll call you.
Yeah, we've spent like 5 hours together. Well, actually, they started at 4. So I guess it's like they spent half a day together.
They actually did go to dinner at like 3:15. So.
But yeah, I guess his one semester at Pepperdine included smooth-talking gigolo class, because damn. Anyway, Brenda comes in, braced for a lecture from Jim, which she tries to head off by proposing a new understanding about her comings and goings now that she's in college. But to her shock, Jim agrees. Please remember that for next time. Brenda seems disappointed that he didn't want to fight about it, but upstairs, her other dad can't help commenting in our final clip.
I can't believe you let her get away with it.
Fuck off.
She's
not
18.
Part of this.
And also, even if she weren't, you're not her dad, you fucking shitbox. So fuck the fuck out.
What? And why do you care? Like, why are you trying to cock block her? You can't date her. Deal with it.
And why are you? You can't date anyone. You look like a boot brush got strapped to a very small turtle.
In the next episode, it's already growing out hilariously.
I know,
like, you
God.
Can tell everyone was like, oh, we really fucked up. Like, it's visibly looking better to the point where you're like, did they glue extra hair on him?
I think they may have. There's a couple of shots, which you will see in visual aids, where I theorize as to whether that's actual hair or like couvray or whatever it is. But thank you, hair.
But that's next time. This time, we got to wrap it up. Let's start with our MVP. God.
Yeah.
I
really, it pains me as a feminist to keep picking this bro because he's a super creep. But I got Ghost Sears. He can only be what he is.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of want to give it to Stuart for Let's Not Even Try, but the dancing.
Yeah, so, the dancing.
Instead, I'm going to give it to Donna, who's the only person in her apartment who has any sense and is apparently going to class and trying to do well at school. Least valuable player.
Andrea.
Yeah. I'm going to say Dan because I got tested. Shut up. No one is impressed by you. Shut the fuck up about where
did you get your eyes
until
tested?
You die.
Because maybe if you'd been to Lens Crafters instead of Planned Parenthood, you'd realize that everybody knows you're a Dan Chaser. Now that there's anything wrong with that. Oh, God.
I mean, at this point, Gabrielle Carteris is like minimum 6 years younger than any of us in this room. It doesn't matter.
No,
we're not trying
really...
to make anyone think we're 18, okay? Just
no,
saying.
We're not. And here's the thing. It's fine. She looks great now, but here's
she
the
does.
Fucked up part. She looks the same now.
She looks the same, and it's been over 25 years.
Which is what the universe owed her after the
absolutely.
Bullshit they used to put her in and through on this show, like that fucking home plate shape hairstyle she has. Why?
Yeah.
She didn't even get an action figure. Give her a fucking break.
I know, it's sad.
She's the president of acting now.
I know. All right, let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways in this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, let's start with dangerous, because don't drive angry and don't drive that fast down a fucking alley. I don't care how late it is, Dylan.
Yeah, also, don't drive with the window rolled down. Like, what are you smoking now? Because that's bad and dangerous.
And bad to buy that car, because it just makes you look like an asshole, which you are.
Yeah, and if you're going to buy and wear a poet shirt, please buy one in your actual size and not in an XXXXL that is going to fill with air and send you, like, whatever, pinwheeling over the Hollywood Hills like a lost balloon.
And quit being so mad at Jim. He's just trying to look out for you. You said you wanted to buy a beater and then you bought a Porsche. You brought this on yourself. That makes fun.
Agreed.
Why should I take a backseat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. All right, we're still talking about her engagement to Dean Factor. Let's wrap it up.
Every time I remember Foofus, and it brings me joy. Wherever you are, Foofus, thank you.
Someone tweeted to us this week that her Latin teacher in high school was very sad when that engagement broke up because he was Foofus's uncle, and that meant he didn't get to go to the wedding. So,
Uncle
sorry,
Foofus.
Foofus Senior.
Oh no,
Uncle Foofus. If it's not a character from a Dickens novel, if someone should just write one in there. Anyway, we're not talking about Foofus. We're talking about Dean Factor. After 8 months of Shannon hell, on May 14th, Dean Factor filed for a temporary restraining order against Shannon Doherty after 2 weeks of continued violence, in which time the actress, he claimed, broke a locked door down with a ski boot. Okay, that's wow. Kind of gangster. Threw a television set to the ground, ditto, and threw a heavy flashlight at his head. He continued to see stars, which for some reason is in quotation marks, until the night of May 14th when her temper ignited a particularly explosive outburst. Duroflame Doherty heaved a log through a window to get in Dean's locked house. Her true colors burned with a raging intensity as she threatened him with her gun. I was weary of the verbal assaults and locked myself in our bathroom. At this point, she threatened to shoot me and said, "I'm going to drop you." I knew she had a loaded 9mm automatic. I heard the chamber pulled back. At that point, I hastily exited the house through a back door connected to the bathroom. Also weird, why do you have a door leading from your bathroom to the outside? Anyway, it was a cruel twist of fate that placed the gun in Shannon's hand with the barrel pointed at the door Dean was hiding behind. And though no bullets were fired, the action blew the lid off the troubled relationship. When Shannon showed up at Dean's place with her parents, Tom and Rosa, to retrieve her belongings, the survey said that it turned into a real family feud. All right, calm down. Dean's mother indicated that her encounter with Doherty was as bad as a peck on the lips from Overhill game show host Richard Dawson. Overhill is one word now, okay. Before the breakup, however, the relationship reached another sour note when he asked her to name that tune to his proposal of marriage. Unfortunately, their hit songs were just misses. Dean was belting out Going to the Chapel while Shannon began to shriek a rendition of Torn Between Two Lovers. Cliffhanger! The end.
Yes. Oh, the clip is at zero volume. There we go.
Next time on Dead With This... The Foofus! Next time on Again With This, Stuart and Brenda get more serious, Brandon gets a foxy tutoring client, and gets on my goddamn nerves with his ignorance of basic baseball terminology, and Dylan gets a new ride, while his old ride, Kelly, gets closer to John Sears. You'll want to buy a gun when you get a load of our visual aids for this episode and every other episode of 90210 that we've covered. You can find all of those at previously.tv, and you can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I am also on Twitter. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, but my Twitter handle is at Tomato Nation. You can find my fine feathered co-host on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And where's our producer? Is he in his keyboard lair or is he on Instagram at Glark? Only one way to find out. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.